I am John, Whoopi impersonator, and a Eladrin warlock with the Warriors of the Stars. Along came Jason, my bearded friend. Fabulous secret ideas were revealed to me the day he came to my house and said, I want to make a podcast! Only two others share this secret. Eric of the Loch Ness and Jacob. Together we started talking about toys, comics, games, and movies on the Super Awesome Geek Show!
If there's something strange in your studio, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters!
If there's something weird slamming on your mic, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters! Very good, very good.
How do you like that?
Well, we'll have to work on the tempo a little bit. Some things to, got some nipping and tucking to do.
Yeah. Well, so today, as you guys can guess, we're going to talk about Ghostbusters on the Super Awesome Geek Show. I'm John, your host, and I'm here with Eric.
Hey, guys.
He was a lovely part of our chorus there.
I love this town.
But you know what? Before we get into Ghostbusters, I've got a couple of interviews I'd like to share with you. I met with Michael Lopez and Jenny Smith. They do The Grid, part of their evolving universe. Hear a little bit about them. I'll give you a segment about their interview I did with those guys. It's pretty cool stuff. And then I met Mike Falick with Our Hero. He does a comic, and, well, he's also a stand-up comedian. He's done some comedy work, and he has a friend named Troy, and they do a YouTube channel, Late Night with Black Troy. It's pretty funny. Encourage you to check that out. So first up, let me tell you a little bit about The Grid. Michael Lopez and Jenny Smith, part of their evolving universe. Take a listen to this.
We got Michael Lopez and Jennifer Smith. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about this cool stuff that's going on.
Okay, well, Jenny, I'll be the gentleman and let you go first.
I'm Jenny. My former life, I have been an attorney, and it turns out that my personality is a lot more conducive to geeking out over just about anything rather than, you know, writing contracts. So
you can write geeky contracts.
Oh, you can. Oh, you can. And we have. Oh, yes. Don't. Yeah. So Mike and I talked about this idea that he's had several years ago, and it's been part of a sort of a long process to get to this point. I am just so thrilled to be part of this. And, well, Mike, it's really your brainchild, so you should probably talk.
You see what she did there?
I totally set you up.
Yes, I'm Mike Lopez. I've actually been in the corporate world for a long time, serving as project manager, built many departments. I've always had this penchant for being a gamer. I've always been a gamer, but I've always been an artist and a writer. And those were the three things that I've always had just hardcore wired into my DNA. And I just figured, okay, you know what? I love what I do at work, but I'm just not happy doing it. So I want to do something that I'm truly happy doing. And I came up with this crazy idea, and now we're where we're at today. And we just launched our Kickstarter. We're excited. And yeah, it's just been a total amazing experience. I couldn't have asked to work with better people in my life. I mean, Jenny's been awesome. Our other two partners have been amazing. And all the people that we've incorporated and worked with along the way have been fantastic.
Cool. So I have to ask, you've got me really intrigued now. What is it?
We all like to read comics, or a good portion of us do. We all like to play tabletop board games. You know, a lot of us have mobile phones with games on them. Hey, I'm onto something here.
Yeah.
So that's when I came up with this concept. It's called Evolving Universe. The Grid is actually the first series in that Evolving Universe concept. And basically what The Grid itself is it's a story. It's a story told across three unique individual formats. The first format, which our Kickstarter is for, is the interactive comic. And it's a comic graphic novel that we're going to produce and present in a totally unique way that's going to involve and bring the reader more into the story than anything done currently on the market.
That's pretty cool.
So be sure to go check out that pretty cool stuff, The Grid. in the interview section of SuperAwesomeGeekShow.com. And now we got Mike Fallick. Mike does a comic called Our Hero, and we got to geek out with him for a little while. So check out this geek fest.
Mike, why don't you introduce us? Introduce yourself a little bit. Let us know all the cool stuff you do. I mean, you got a lot of stuff going on, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, right now, sort of, I'm full-time internet campaigning. I have a podcast called Late Night with Black Troy, which is sort of a trying ground for my stand-up and my writing, and a friend of mine who's an actor, and we work through whatever we're writing at the time, and we try it on each other. The sort of motto of the show is no mulligans, you know, like, try it. If it doesn't work, whatever, move on. But that's sort of the format of the show. I'm a stop-motion animator. I have some of my videos up online, and right now I'm working on an Indiegogo campaign to raise money to tell the history of the hamster in stop motion.
That's cool.
So what have you been geeking out about lately? Like, what are you reading? I recently was embarrassed at a cocktail party because someone listed all these indie comics, you know, non superhero comics, and I said, oh my god, I've read none of those, and I sort of left the party very quickly to start Googling. So I'm hesitant to ask this question, but.
Well, one thing off the top of my head that I've been really enjoying is a series called Rust, graphic novels.
They're by Royd and Lepp. That stuff's just been amazing. And I've been passing the books around to my friends and other people who have families and things, and they're sharing it with their kids and stuff. And it's been fantastic. I mean, it's just an amazing story.
I've been so I go through these stages where I find someone on Amazon or someone at, like, you know, where you're at, and, like, I find a great deal on, like, a bunch of comics.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a moratorium for like a good 2 months so that I don't bankrupt myself, you know, like, no, there's, so right now I'm in a no more comics lull, but you know, that's tenuous at the best, but I'm definitely writing Rust down as we speak. I was super into superheroes too. So I'm sort of doing catch up in the world of, you know, regular indie graphic novels that are normal stories that have nothing to do with Superman or anybody like that.
Yeah. Growing up, I was always a superhero guy. I don't think I got into
the more independent stuff until the last 2 or 3 years. And maybe that's something to do with my maturity level. Like, I'm changing, you know, hitting this age, and things are just changing for me. But I don't know. But for whatever reason, I've been leaning more towards the independent stuff. And fresh new stories, new ideas, you know, new characters, things like that has been grabbing me.
Yeah, you sort of become, you know, almost in the realm of religious fanatic when you own, and I sort of got there as well when you were,
yeah,
only reading Batman for, you know, 15 some odd years since you were a boy. And it's like, all this person knows is this lore about this one character, and that's like all they can relate to, you know. It's like, it gets crazy. But in terms of maturity, I think I too have been more open to the less, the less fantastical. But kids these days, I, as a creator, as someone that's, you know, trying to do these things, I am so afraid of them, because they are, you know, there are 10-year-olds right now who are like, yeah, I'm done with all the superheroes. I've read all of them. You know, they are media monsters. They just eat this stuff. And they're going to grow up in 2 or 3 years, and they're going to, you know, there's
going to be a lot of filmmakers and, you know, artists and stuff that are going to be like, this 14-year-old kid knows Photoshop better than me.
The whole reason for our name is Our Hero Comic. That's a graphic novel that we put out, and I, like, hand publish them. So we print them,
and we do the binding ourselves. It's not like a staple. It's like a real binding, but we do I do it all in house. So that's a pretty cool comic.
Yeah. You have an Etsy store, don't you? The Hot Robot Chick Pipes, right?
Yes, Hot Robot Chick Pipes on Etsy. And you can, the store is also accessible through OurHeroComic.com. And that was a whole other journey of going to small comic cons and trying to develop this comic book. And Casey Drogan, who's our artist, is incredibly talented. And that whole idea was also based out of Nerd Love. The character there is, and the story which we're trying to sort of get the funds to do now is, a nerd becomes president. The idea is we get our first nerd, and I wrote this around the time when we were getting our first African-American president, and I said, well, my demographic is usually forgotten as getting first. So I said, what if we get our first nerd president? And the story sort of goes on to what a nerd does when he's not only in charge, but sort of in this position that is fantastical, is the president, who is a character himself in most
graphic novels and things like that. And what does he do if he finds superheroes? And that was all based on nerd love and giving actual power to nerds. What would that be like? And I try not to be too meta, but it's good.
Who do you think the most nerdiest president we've had so far? Like, who's the nerdiest? Who's the geekiest president?
Oh, I mean...
I think that's a pretty good place to leave it. If you want to find out who we think the geekiest president is, you can go over to the interview section of superawesomegeekshow.com and check out that interview with Mike Falick. Pretty cool stuff. It's totally awesome. So now Eric and I are going to go talk about something strange in our neighborhood.
So, Eric, what was the first time you saw Ghostbusters? Mm. Was it the theater? Did you see it in the theater?
Sure. That's a good question. I imagine I did. If I would have seen it in 1984, you know what? I might have seen it. If I did see it in the theater, I would have done it in a drive-in theater. Were you in a walk-in or a drive-in?
I think I was in a walk-in.
Okay.
Yeah, I really do. I think we saw it. You know, I only remember one or two movies at a drive-in.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Wars was one of them. But yeah. Pretty much, I only remember one or two movies at a drive-in.
Okay.
I think we might have seen The Last Starfighter at a drive-in also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I don't believe we saw the Ghostbusters at a drive-in.
I know I also saw Ghostbusters 2 in a drive-in.
Really?
Yep. True story.
I think that, if I remember correctly, I do believe that we went and saw both Ghostbusters 1 and Ghostbusters 2 in the theaters. Really loved them as a kid, and I was really into the cartoon shows too. Cartoon was pretty
good.
Did you ever encounter the cartoon?
I did not encounter the cartoons, but in researching this and watching the movie, I just got done watching the first one. I got online to look at some information, and the mythology on this story goes deeper than I ever knew.
Yeah. What did you find out? Do you have a couple highlights or not?
The only highlight I have was I wanted to look up Winston Zeddemore, and he's the fourth Ghostbuster.
Oh, yeah, Winston, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was brought on a little later, but it goes into stuff that I had no idea about. The Ghostbusters video game seems to go into it, as well as the cartoon. Have you played the video game at all?
I haven't played the latest game, but you know, I hear that one is fantastic. I hear it's an amazing game.
Okay.
I should get it. If I ever see it coming into work, I should pick it up at the
bookstore.
Half Price Books.
Yeah, put it down. Anyway, so I saw his stuff, and apparently he goes on to get his doctorate and participating with the team and all sorts of stuff. So there's a whole area, kind of like, well, not exactly like Star Wars. That might be a little deeper, but it's interesting.
Yeah, the Winston showed up like, what, almost halfway through the first movie, right? Didn't mm-hmm. He was hired on as like the fourth.
That's what I would have said, yeah, halfway.
Yeah, and he ended up being a great character because he's not as comedic as the other guys. Mm-hmm. So they play off him and end up with some really incredible lines and things, right? Like interactions between each other. And that's what I like, is interactions between characters.
Yeah, the wiki puts him down as, a paraphrasing here, but being down to earth, a little dependable, very dependable individual, I guess.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the cartoon, if we can go back to that real quick.
Sure.
So when I was a kid, I was always super confused. There was two cartoons. Did you run into this?
I did not.
So there was two cartoons, one that was called The Ghostbusters, and then one that was called The Real Ghostbusters.
Interesting.
And it always confused me because I didn't understand why there were two different ones when I was a child. But Jason, who would normally be with us, is at Bumper Shoot this weekend.
Cool.
And any of you guys paying attention could now do the math and figure out how far ahead our buffer is. From the, you know. But he's been sending me stuff, I guess, in his downtime at Bumper Shoot related to the Ghostbusters. And he sent me something about a 1975 TV series called The Ghostbusters. And did you get this link, Eric, or not?
I did not. I have The Real Ghostbusters up, and it says first episode date September 13th, 1986.
There's a link. Did that link go to you in the notes, in the Skype message?
I will look now. I have it, and I'm going to it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this 1975 TV show, The Ghostbusters, was a live-action television series that ran in 1975. It was a team of bumbling detectives who would investigate ghostly occurrences. There were only 15 minutes created, and it had Forrest Tucker, Larry Storch, and they were actually in F Troop also. And Tucker played Jake Kong. Storch played zoot suit wearing Eddie Spencer. And the third member of the trio was Tracy the Gorilla, which was played by an actor named Bob Burns.
Wow, so this is the reason that they had to retitle The Real Ghostbusters, kind of like Wham! UK or something?
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there must have been, by the time they made the cartoon, there must have been some kind of weird licensing thing when they were able to make the cartoon. And it does say here that Columbia Pictures did pay Filmation for a license to use the name Ghostbusters.
Wow.
But it wasn't really related to these three guys. And then I think the cartoon that I'm confused with was these three guys being turned into a cartoon. And then they had the real Ghostbusters, which was the which was those guys. And then they had the Ghostbusters, which was just based on the movies, right?
Yeah.
I don't have it mixed up, right? That's how it really was, right?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. We'll go with it.
All right. I'm sure people can post and let me know if I mixed it up. But what we're talking about is mostly the movie, the one and two that were in 1984. And then the second one was what, 1980? Was it 86 or 88?
I'm not there right now.
Ghostbusters 2? 89. It says June of 89. So it was actually longer than I thought. That's 5 years.
Yeah, from 89 to...
84 to 89, 5 years difference.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm.
And going back to Winston and being like the lines and the interactions between characters, like, do you have any favorite lines from the movie, Eric? I mean, just watching it today, like, how many times did you laugh just at, like, the interaction between, like, the mayor and the other guys? You know?
Yes, I should have written down some of those quotes. You know, the classic ones, the common classic ones, mass hysteria, cats and dogs living together as they're ramping up trying to sell the mayor on
there. Yeah.
Letting them go for the plan.
The mayor's like, what do you mean biblical? And he goes, well, what he means is Old Testament, Mr. Mayor, real wrath of God type of stuff.
Yeah.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies, rivers and seas boiling, 40 years of darkness, earthquake, volcanoes, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Yeah, as they build up and then release the pressure with the... You know, the comic approach. It was enjoyable to watch. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Walter Peck, his character, William Atherton, if I'm pronouncing it right, the actor. He does that character so well. You know,
he's the
EPA guy,
the environmentalist, right?
Yeah. So
he's amazing.
Just trying to get control and in people's faces and trying to have this respect my authority.
Yeah. And I love it because, like, Winston throws in the middle the dead rising from the grave.
Yeah.
And, like, speaking of Winston, I love the line where he goes, he's like, tell him about the Twinkie.
Yeah. Tell what about the Twinkie?
Tell him about the Twinkie, he goes. Yeah. That references an exchange that they had that he had with Dr. Spengler. That's like doesn't he say that when the environmentalist walks in? When the environmentalist walks in and he starts talking about something and he goes, tell him about the Twinkie.
Well,
or was that in a different spot?
You know, I remember, well, they were down there talking about the issue. I need to find the doctor's name, Dr. Stance. Let's see here. No, not Stance.
Egon Spengler and Winston were down in the thing and Ray is all down there, and Spengler goes, I'm worried, Ray. It's getting crowded in there.
Yeah,
Spengler. And all the data points to something big on the horizon, and Winston's like, what do you mean by big?
Right.
And he goes, well, let's say this Twinkie represents the normal amount of psychokinetic energy in New York area. And he goes, based on this morning's sample, it would be a Twinkie 35 feet long, weighing approximately 600 pounds.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great one.
And then later in the movie, Winston just goes, tell him about the Twinkie.
Yeah. And you know, the great comic thing where you let things be true. It's one of those things that you do in interacting where you don't want to catch somebody up by having to explain something. You just allow it to be true. What about the Twinkie? So Bill Murray's response, what about the Twinkie, is just, they do it in... improv.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Did they actually improv those or did you...
No, I'm just saying that's something you do in improv to keep the flow going.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you loop it back around.
Yeah, you let it be true. You don't ever say I don't get it or explain that. It's just you just say what about the Twinkie instead of Twinkie. That doesn't make no sense, you know. You just gum up the works like I just did with our conversation. So, keep going. Classic song.
The Ghostbusters theme song?
Mhm.
Absolutely. Do you know who it's by?
Is it Ray Parker?
I don't know. Was it Ray Parker?
Yeah, Ray Parker Jr. I looked out the Jr.
Okay, Ray Parker Jr.
Mm-hmm. Which brings up the question, are you afraid of ghosts, John?
You know, it's hard to say, because like I'm not really afraid of, like, if a ghost were here and it wasn't really doing anything, I don't think I'd be afraid of it. But the idea that something can touch me and move objects that I can't fight back with, mm-hmm. is kind of scary. You know what I mean? Like if there was an invisible something in my room throwing paintings off the wall at me, and I couldn't physically fight back because everything I throw at it goes right through it, that does kind of freak me out because it puts you at a, you know, the ghost is at an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
But, and I do have this fear a little bit of things that are unknown, you know, things that go bump in the night.
Sure.
Because there are times when you, I mean, I wouldn't say like a deathly crippling fear, but you know, there's that little like, what the heck is going on kind of feeling, you know, or, ooh, is there something there? You know, like if you're late at night in the middle of the dark room and I'm watching some, usually it is something about ghosts, you know, that's the one thing that would get me. You know, I can watch other scary movies in the middle of the night and not have any problem with it, you know,
mm-hmm.
but if it is about ghosts, for some reason that does, I think it is a little bit of that unknown.
Yeah
What about you? I mean,
I, you know, I've never experienced them, but if you were to run into something, I think that is out of the norm. For example, in the Bible, for example, it talks about the encounters with angels, and the guys are very scared, so much so that the angels will say, don't be afraid, you know. And so I think that's kind of interesting. I don't know what that kind of image would look like, but I think when something is out of the norm, that I think you alluded to, that you're not piecing together in the normal flow of regularity that we have. We do all these things as a normal progress. I think that's what, when I think of horror movies or I think of ways in which you're scared, it's because you're not expecting it. When you see Jason from Halloween down there on the ground outside a window, for example, maybe like this, you see him out there and then you turn around and suddenly he's up on the second floor hallway, you know, that's kind of scary because that's faster in the editing and in the experience. And so you're like, that sort of freaks you out, that kind of stuff.
I just saw a line on here. Sorry.
Yeah, go for it.
I was staring at the screen while you were talking, while I was listening to you. And Peter Venkman, in one of the movies, says a line, "We've been going about this all wrong. Okay. This Mr. Stay Puft's okay. He's a sailor. He's in New York. We get this guy laid and we won't have any trouble."
Right, yes.
I don't remember that line. Do you?
I just saw it. Yep, I just saw it.
I watched it yesterday and I don't remember that line.
They're seeing him down there. Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's all classic, too. I mean, maybe it just got my brain when I was young, but it was like visiting an old friend, you know?
Yeah, totally.
The lines, their surprises, their experience. You don't sit here and think about, wow, did they act it well or something? It all just is, you know, inside your mind and enjoyable.
But going back to the fear, I think what it is that, like, because what you were describing, I think, is more of the jump reaction fear, which you see in movies. You know, if something jumps out at you, you do have that jump.
Okay.
And, yeah, that happens to me. You know, I fall for that just like anybody else. If something jumps out of the closet, it'll make me jump in my seat. But I don't consider that fear. Mm. You know what I mean? I think that's just a reaction to something jumping out of it startled you, you know. Okay. Fear to me is when you are crippled.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like you are like when I go on a hike with one of my friends, and if we get to a narrow point, I go on hikes in the mountains a lot, and if you get on to a narrow point, I have one friend that will not walk across any narrow thing because he's that afraid of falling.
Yeah.
He's that afraid of heights that it cripples him to the point where he cannot go on the hike any further when we reach that point. So he'll either turn around and go back to the car, or he'll hang out there if we want to go ahead, mm-hmm. and we'll walk ahead for a half hour or so and then come back because we don't want to leave him on for that long.
Sure. You know?
And so that's what I look at, and that's why I was saying I don't have any crippling fear.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it's because when I was a kid, I talked myself out of it because I was like, the only fear that a person really has, all fear, in my opinion, stems down to a fear of death.
Mm.
And if you're not really afraid of death, then you don't really have any more fears in life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, to me, death is just the next step, you know what I mean? Whatever happens, we don't know about. So, you know, we don't have conclusive, absolute proof. And I personally do not believe that ghosts exist.
Okay.
You know, I don't, because in my opinion, if ghosts exist, they'd be everywhere. You know what I mean? Okay. There'd be billions or trillions of ghosts. Think about how many people have lived throughout all of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So you'd be bumping into them every other day if ghosts were real. Like, there's not enough places on this earth for them to hide if there's trillions or gajillions worth of ghosts out there. You know? So I just don't see it. You know.
So your answer to the Ray Parker song is, I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
I'm not really afraid of anything.
Right. There you go. You can put ghosts in there if you want to.
How about you? I mean, is there stuff that you're definitely afraid of?
Definitely afraid of.
And I mean, I have anxieties and I get like stage fright and weird little things, you know what I mean? So there isn't like, it's not like I don't have fears. I'm just saying there's no fear that makes me crippled to the point where I can't go on like one of my friends, you know?
I seem to overcome them when I have to do something. You know, I've flown a bit in my life and that's, I'm a white knuckle flyer because of so many things that you just don't know about, right? Did the guy grease the jack screw and the tail of the MD-80, you know?
Yeah.
So,
see, I don't get afraid of crashing when it comes to airplanes. I get afraid of getting through security.
Okay.
That's where my anxiety comes from when I go to get on a plane. Because once I get to the gate and I'm actually sitting down, I notice that all my anxiety disappears.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's not the act of flying that actually makes me anxious when it comes to flying.
Sure.
It's the act of having to get through security and answer all their stupid questions. And if you do one little thing wrong or glance at them weird, you're out of the line and you're being searched and you know what I mean? And it takes forever just for you to get through.
It's been a while since I've flown, so you must be experiencing new stuff out there.
It takes forever. You have to take all your shoes off, take your belt off, stand through this little thing that goes around you with your arms in the air. And if you leave one piece of paper in your pocket, they go, "What's in your pockets?" Right. You know, it's a piece of paper that tells me what gate I need to go to. What the hell?
Well, they're afraid of terrorists.
Crippling.
Yeah.
To the point of where it's crippling the airline industry.
Sure.
I personally don't think we need that much security. The chances of that actually happening I thought I read a statistic once where your plane being hijacked and falling into something is less of a chance of you than if you actually got hit by lightning.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we don't go around wearing all these giant, you know, the government doesn't impose plastic suits on everybody because they're worried they're going to get electrocuted or rubberized things so that the electricity will, you know, miss them or whatever.
Right.
So why would they mandate things at the airport, you know? It's just so stupid. Yeah. They don't do it for buses, trains, or anything else.
Well, not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. tell me about the second movie. Do you remember the arc of it? There's a slime running underneath the city?
Yeah, so slime's going under the city. It's feeding on all the negativity that's in the city, and it's making this painting of this bad guy come to life. What was his name again? Who is it? The guy in the painting. Who was his name again?
I'll have to look.
Viggo, right?
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, Viggo. V-I-G-O.
And is there...
16th century tyrant, Viggo von Homburg-Deutschendorf.
Wow, that's impressive.
He's a German dwarf?
Okay.
They must have made that name up. No one's really named German dwarf, are they?
There's it just makes me think of another interesting German name, Hasselhoff.
Is that one real or is that...
I would imagine it's real. But somebody, you know, feel free to correct and jump in. I don't know if he made up... I don't know if that's a stage name or not.
He was voiced by Max von Sydow. But yeah, he comes back to life by stealing the baby, right? They want the baby from Ripley there. What's her name?
Sigourney Weaver. Yeah, okay.
She's always going to be Ripley from the alien movies, unfortunately.
Yeah, people wanting stuff from inside her body.
Yeah.
The military, Spectres.
You're right, yeah. The ghost wants her baby. The military wants the alien. Paul wants to go home.
You gotta have a big head after that kind of experience, I think. That's no knock on Sigourney Weaver, by the way. I don't know anything about it.
And she doesn't have a big... Her head's fine. Did you like part two as much? I always wondered why there wasn't a third.
I have to watch part two again. When I saw it, the girl I dated, she had a relative that was one of the jogging ghosts.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Where was she from?
She was from, I believe, she lived with her mom in Florida and then moved to Hawaii to be with her dad.
I see.
Either Florida or California, one of those coasts with a beach.
Now, did you find this out before or after you started?
I found out when we went to the movie.
Oh, okay.
She told me that.
So you had asked her to the movie and then while you're watching her after?
Yes. I think it was before the movie that she told me, or might have been when we were making plans to go.
I see. Did it have any influence on your decision to go out with this girl?
It did. No, we were already dating.
I see, yeah.
It was a short getting to know you kind of dating thing.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes they click, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, relationships are tough.
So, because I always wondered why the third one was never made, if there even was a plan or anything. But my feeling at the time was that maybe people didn't react to the second one as well as the first one.
Well, let's find out how – do we know how it did financially? I'm going to go look this up.
Look it up while I'm talking. Because I feel, I watched them both yesterday because they're both on Netflix. So if you haven't seen the second one, Eric, if you want to watch it again, you can find it on Netflix.
Okay.
Was that where you found the first one?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the second one's up there as well. And I watched them both back to back yesterday while I was feeling kind of ill. I had something in my stomach that was making my food not stay in there. And so I watched Ghostbusters back to back and then took a nap. And I felt the second one was just as good. I mean, I didn't really care for the Viggo character that much, and I didn't like the curator of the museum. I thought that, the actor's fine. You know, he's done well in other things. But I just felt like they made him too corny and weird. Like, he wasn't likable at all. And he felt kind of disturbing and sick in the way that he was interested in Sigourney Weaver's character there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made me feel... The way that he interacted with Sigourney Weaver's character just made me feel dirty, like it was filthy. You know what I mean? Like I don't even want to hear some of the things that are coming out of his mouth just because of the innuendo or the insinuation that he has behind it. And he seemed like a slimy kind of character,
right?
That, like, of course you wouldn't date him. Why would you? You
sure.
know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And I always wondered if that the way that character was, and then the bad guy that was in the painting, because they weren't very well. They weren't, you know. They were more disgusting than just, you know what I mean, real villains, you know, real evil villains. And it kind of made me, I wondered if that was why people aren't attracted as much to the second film. What do you think? Well, of course you haven't watched
it. Well, what I'm seeing is, in my drive-by analysis of the money made, it looks like Ghostbusters 2 made $215 million worldwide,
okay.
While Ghostbusters, the first one, made $292 million worldwide.
So they're not far off from each other.
No. But I am seeing that something about Bill Murray shredding the script and sending it back for Ghostbusters 3.
Back then or recently? Because recently I know that they've had a big issue with trying, because they've been talking about coming out with another Ghostbusters movie. And I think that was a little bit of the drive behind making that new Ghostbusters video game.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I can't remember which one, it might be him, has repeatedly just been like, no, I am not, I'm just tossing these scripts out, like there's no way he wants to do it, and he doesn't even want to give his okay for somebody else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel like he's kind of railroading the whole franchise and just being a bully about it and not letting it move on. And my feeling is that everybody out there wants a Ghostbusters 3,
mm-hmm.
and if they're not willing to participate in it, then they should pass the torch and let somebody else do it and just have a creative writer to make up either a new team or just have new actors playing the same old guys that we have. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They've done Star Trek and various other things where
sure.
they just get new actors.
Sure.
I mean, the model from Doctor Who, they get a new doctor every 3 to 5 years,
sure.
right? And it still goes on. So, I mean, like, the public is okay with new actors playing our same old characters.
Mm-hmm.
The public's okay with having new people, new teams play a different take on old franchises. So I don't see any reason for them to hold back on the Ghostbusters and just give it to us again.
Yeah, that might be the new sequel kind of thing, where it's just okay to move forward. The drive-by information I'm seeing, 2011 and 2012, is that he didn't shred the script and that they may have to move on without Bill Murray. But I don't see anything more recent from...
Yeah.
back then, so it looks like no progress.
Yeah, and then since then, one of them has died, right?
That's right.
The guy who plays Egon, right?
That's right, yeah.
So wait, yeah. Sorry, well, that's Harold Ramis, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right.
Right, yeah, we should have known that off the top of our
yeah,
head.
Yeah, we should have. Yeah, apparently he directed Groundhog Day, which I found out when he was
Harold uh-huh. Ramis did? Okay.
Which I found out when they were on the Bob Rivers show. I believe they were interviewing Stephen Tobolowsky, and Stephen Tobolowsky is the insurance salesman.
Uh-huh. Really? Huh. Yeah, because, like, let's go through. So the ones who are still alive, Bill Murray's mm-hmm. still alive, mm-hmm. right? Unless you watch Zooland, or no, right? No.
Zombieland.
He died in Zombieland. He played Dr. Peter Venkman. And then Dan Aykroyd is still alive. He played Dr. Raymond mm-hmm. Stantz. Sigourney Weaver was Dana. That's right, it was Dana.
She's doing movies.
And Harold Ramis. And Harold Ramis was Dr. Egon Spengler. And Rick Moranis, he's still alive, right? Louis Tully.
I would imagine so, uh-huh.
And then, of course, like you mentioned, Ernie Hudson played
uh-huh.
Winston.
He's still alive.
Yeah.
Annie Potts, I imagine they can get her back. By the way, Annie Potts, if you haven't seen her in Corbett's.
Yeah, you're right. She was the secretary girl, mm-hmm. Janine, yep. Right? But sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I always enjoyed her in Corbett Summer, and she actually got nominated for something with that performance, something like Best New Actress or some such. But definitely worth your time if you want to see, you know, the 70s back then, Star Wars, the craze, and Mark Hamill sort of playing the same character in a way.
Yeah, so I guess Harold Ramis is the only one who's dead. We miss you, Harold. We'd love to see another Egon.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that franchise. I imagine they'll have to dip into it at some point.
Yeah, I think they eventually will, and it's just going to be, I mean, a matter of time,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Eric, you know, speaking of time, we've been talking for about a half hour. Maybe we should call
okay.
it time.
Okay.
Let's, yeah, all right. So, thanks for coming
you
out
bet.
Here.
Glad to be here. Talk thanks later. For hosting.
We'll talk okay. to you later. Who are you going to
call? Ghostbusters. You know, G. They're the only people to call when you run into that stuff. And you know, actually, the thing we did not trail off on is the Ghostbusters of modern day stuff.
That's true. Yeah, let's touch on that sure. just for a minute. So of all the ghost hunters and the various things that are going on, do you think they're all influenced by Ghostbusters?
That's a good question. I imagine that it's coupled with it at some point. They're going out with their equipment. They're purchasing stuff. In fact, I have family down in Nevada, Reno, Nevada, and they knew of a group that would go out and do stuff. They didn't have their own video series or anything, but they would go to places to try and record EVPs or some such, and that was kind of interesting to hear about. But yeah, that seems to be quite popular nowadays.
Yeah, I wonder if we could get Jason or Grant to come on and talk to us at some point. I should contact them and ask, and then we could find out if they're really, if they were influenced by the Ghostbusters or not. That'd be an interesting
thing
to talk to them
about.
Yeah,
that'd be a good interview for you. I was also going to say, I had an idea for a story. This is what you and I could do. What we could do is we could go into people's homes that aren't haunted and convince them that they're haunted. You know, we sit there with the EVP stuff and pick out things and say, look, you got things in here. You need to get rid of them.
Have you ever run one of those in your house?
No, I should.
If you could get one. I borrowed one from a friend. I think Matt at work had one. I don't remember who it was now. One of the guys at work had one because they were seriously thinking about, you know, messing around with some of this mm-hmm. stuff. And I took it home for an evening and left it on. I'm like, maybe it was someone I met through work. I don't remember exactly. But anyways, I set it on, and I left it here while I was watching TV one night. And every once in a while, it would tick. And one time, it actually went for, like, 30 seconds. It was just constantly, you know, right. And the lights were going. And I was like, huh. So I know my place isn't haunted. Right. You know what
yeah.
I mean? So what's setting it off? And I'm like, so I think that just random radio waves or various other things. I mean, I don't know how those things work, sure. but I just feel like something running through the air, a certain frequency or something, just eventually will trigger it. So no matter where you go, no matter where you are, you'll eventually get a reading on one of those devices.
Right.
And then the ghost hunter people will always be like, oh, you have a ghost.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's probably some generic random radio signal that just kind of flew through.
That
you
could
know?
Be a,
there's so much crap flying through our airwaves
yeah.
these days. I'm sure it picks up once in a while.
That could,
those things.
That could be a funny comedy, though, somehow, is these guys that go out and they're, you know, trying to make their name or make money or be sort of scam artists and go and talk these people into the idea that their places are haunted and somehow
yeah.
get paid spirit protection money or something.
Because I think that, you know, a lot like we've talked before with Bigfoot and everything, and this goes back to your whole do you believe in ghosts thing, where part of my reason for not believing in ghosts is the same thing, where, like, I want to believe that Bigfoot is real. Of all the creatures out there, I think he has the biggest mm-hmm. shot of being the one that we can find and might actually be
right.
real. But I do have to admit there are 10 billion cell phones out there, and every one of those has a camera
yeah.
in it. And ghosts, just like Bigfoot, just like UFOs.
Yeah.
If any of these things were real, one of those 10 billion phones would get a picture
yes.
of it. you know, an undeniable, irrefutable, you know, no denying it, absolute proof that it's a ghost. And every time you see a picture of a Bigfoot or a, you know, ghost or a UFO that's been captured from a cell phone picture, they look fuzzy, gross, terrible. Mm-hmm. But yet, for some reason, everyone, those same people can take pictures of their, you know, dog running through the forest or running around, you know, and it's not blurry. And it's,
yeah.
And that's in motion. The dog's running at like 60 miles an hour. Yeah.
Remember?
After some deer, and they can get a picture of it, and it's not blurry. But yet they can't take a picture of a still Bigfoot staring at you or a UFO hovering in the
air.
We should
do a show on hoaxes, on the people that go out and perpetuate hoaxes in certain areas and how much fun we have as human beings, you know, doing that.
Yeah. That'd be cool, yeah. And then tell everybody afterwards that it was a hoax. You don't want to
sure. No, mislead. Well, I was meaning we could talk about guys who have gone out and actually done it, right? Like,
Oh, I see. Talk to the ones who've done it.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it ourselves.
Yeah. I wouldn't even mind doing something ourselves. But we got to keep that secret until we get it done and let a few years go past or something.
Well, that's speaking of, that's one of my funny things about crop circles. Like, I don't believe that crop circles are real. They're all man-made. Every single one of them would be considered a hoax, but really they're art. They're not hoaxes. They're art. They're all made by people. And my proof of that is that my friend Todd and I went into my dad's field in upstate New York, and I don't know if I ever told you this, Eric, but one night we studied the techniques and we learned all about it, made our own equipment, and we went out and we made our own crop circle in my dad's field. And sure enough, in the Marion, New York newspapers, you will find pictures of it. And even the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, some crafty person out there who knows more than I do on how to do these searches can eventually find the article where there's a photograph of it from, you know, someone must have stood on a ladder or a real tall object because it's not high enough to be an airplane or anything, but they got a shot of it at an angle from a real high position. Yeah. And it's a real nice look. We made a key, like a circle, okay, with a line in the key form, yeah, and then a couple other designs around it, and someone's got a picture of that. And it took us, I mean, less than a half hour one night. Todd made an entire website about it, like a blog thing like that just went about our whole deal about doing it. And then when articles started showing up in the paper and other people started talking about it as a real crop circle that appeared in upstate New York, then we had to come out and tell everyone it's not real, because we didn't actually think originally that people would start taking pictures and writing articles about it, and people would come out and claim that it's a real one. They were like, well, look how the stalks are bent. They're bent over. They're not broken, you know, and all these things and everything. And I was like, yeah, that's how it works when you do it with this piece of wood, you know?
Yeah.
And so for me, I'm like, that just proved that if people thought the one that I know that I handmade, you know, was real, then every single one of them is false, because all these guys they claimed the same stuff that made mine real was the same stuff they're claiming makes the other ones real.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, it's reasonable to assume that someone's just having fun. I mean, people just do crazy things, from confessing to murders that they don't even do to having fun at other people's expenses. So
yeah, I would always, you know, that taught me a lesson right there, that even if you think no one's going to take it seriously, someone out there will. So therefore, anytime you do something that could be taken as real, you should tell everyone that you did it, and it's actually either a hoax or just some artistic project that you did because you wanted to figure out how to do it, like Todd and I did. And you know.
Yeah, very good.
Come clean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you don't that can be good fun.
Well, let's wash our hands of this episode.
Okay.
Talk to you
Sounds
later.
Good.
Speaking of clean.
Everyone have a good one out there.
Let us know if you find any ghosts, if you find any crop circles, or you find any Bigfoots.
Or most likely.
Prove me wrong.
Most likely we won't be believing you, but please, give us your best.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you later. Keep geeking, everyone. See you, Eric.
Okay, John. Bye.
You've been listening to the Super Awesome Geek Show. We have new episodes every Friday. Interviews and other cool stuff go up on Tuesdays when we have them. You can find us at superawesomegeekshow.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/superawesomegeekshow. We're on Twitter at Awesome Geek Show.
We have a Patreon account, patreon.com/superawesomegeekshow. All your pledges help, and we really appreciate the support. If you'd like to participate and or be on the show, just email me, john@mowich.net. Well, from all of us hosts, we'd like to thank you for listening. Hope you have a good week. And join us next time on the Super Awesome Geek Show. See you later, everyone.